coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Welcome to the first episode of Curious Realm. This has been so exciting, just the whole transformation. I am so happy to bring to you tonight our second guest, J.L. Carpenter. She has been on the show before. She's kind of our legal correspondent whenever we talk about law, legalities, court cases, things like that. And with all of the wildness of the Rittenhouse case recently, with the Aubrey case that just came down with a verdict, as well as just court cases flying around, I thought it was a really great opportunity to bring JL on and talk about the concept of innocent before guilty and how that can kind of be wiped aside by the media. JL, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Chris. I'm glad to be here. I feel special being part of the first episode.
I'm glad that you're part of the first episode because you were one of the many people that whenever you came on, we took on topics that, I mean, even whenever I told my wife that we were going to be covering Kyle Rittenhouse, she was like, "Ooh, wow, are you sure that's really something that you want to touch? Like, that's a hot potato." And I was like, actually, you saying that is what tells me I need to touch it.
Yeah, I got a lot of publicity.
Well, I mean, and that's just it. It got a lot of publicity before court case ever happened.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, and don't get me wrong, it is an emotionally charged case. It was an emotionally charged situation nationwide right. at that point. And when that happened, it was a horrible, horrible incident with all parties involved. But I think it was also the case of there was a lot of media involved before a court case happened. And I think a lot of people had a lot of preconceived notions.
For sure. Absolutely.
Now, as a defense attorney, let's get into a minute what that does for you as far as, because you've handled a couple of high profile cases, things like right. that. What does it do for you as a defense attorney to have to actively defend this person who, as of right now, in the court of public opinion, is guilty until proven innocent?
Well, it's tough because you have to find fair jurors who haven't been tainted by the media publicity leading up to trial. But yes, I've done three high profile trials so far in my career. We're going to do a retrial in January. That's the pending date. But, you know, backing up, if you look back, really, I don't think cameras came into the courtroom until the O.J. Simpson trial. Mm. And then it's just kind of developed from there, not only for media to be involved in these courtroom trials, but also our technology. So much is being caught on cameras. And then that's being brought into the trials as well. But it's difficult when you have media. And I think clickbait has a lot to do with this, right? Mm. Because they want to be the first to get that headline out there. They want to be the first to have all the yeah. clicks on their headlines for. And so in the rush to get that, you're not getting the facts right. And what was really astonishing to me and sad is even while the trial was being publicized, there were a lot of people in our nation who thought that the victims in the Rittenhouse trial were African American.
Yes.
Was not even the case.
Yes.
The other thing that was astonishing was this storyline that he crossed state lines with a gun.
With an illegal firearm.
Right. Which never happened. But, you know, two things that really set me back with the prosecution, really three. One, I couldn't believe that this experienced career prosecutor ever commented on the defendant's silence before trial, right? That's that is the constitutional right to remain silent.
Yes.
And he commented on that in front of the jury, which was, I was taken aback by. That's could have been a cause for a mistrial or even appeal. The other thing was, it was very evident with the questions he was asking and then his handling of the gun in the courtroom that he had no experience with guns. For
yes.
him to pick up that gun, put his finger on the trigger and then pointed around people in the courtroom, I was thinking, you're making a buffoon out of yourself.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it was definitely one of those, how about a little trigger control and a little muzzle control there?
Right.
Because it was definitely, and nowhere, what was funny is any videos that you saw of Kyle, never once was his finger on a trigger, like waiting for action to happen. His finger was out, properly trained, you know, everything else. So yeah, it was, and that's what came down to a lot of the self-defense was it wasn't the fact that, he was there. Otherwise, he'd have just been popping people.
Right. Well, and then the third thing was, you know, it's law school 101. You don't ask a question of a witness that you don't already know the answer to. Mm-hmm. And so they were making a big deal about Kyle being across state lines from where his mother lives. And why was this community important to him to defend? And Kyle said, well, because that's where my father lives. How do you not know after all of everything that they have done to prepare for trial, how do you not know that this kid spends half of his time in this community because his father lives there? It just blew me away.
Yeah. Yeah. And there, I think, like you were saying, there was a lot of mismanagement on the behalf of the prosecutor. I think a lot of people don't realize that most of the time before somebody takes up the practice of being a defense attorney such as yourself, they've actually spent time in the prosecutor's office.
Right. Yeah.
So you've spent time on the other side of the table being the one prosecuting the case.
Right. That's I spent 3 years as a prosecutor, and it's kind of like boot camp for a trial lawyer because you have so many cases and it's baptism by fire. I mean, my first trial, I was just thrown in there. I had to call witnesses immediately to bring them to court. It worked out in my favor, but yeah, I think it's just kind of natural that if you're not going to be a career prosecutor, then eventually you're going to turn and work on the other side as a defense attorney, which as a defense attorney, I was really surprised at how many innocent people actually hire me. People who are wrongfully charged, overcharged, you know, and a lot of that is domestic violence where, and don't get me wrong, like, I am a proponent in helping true victims of domestic violence get out of a bad situation. But I also represent a lot of guys who are falsely charged because it's helping the woman gain ground in family court or out of spite or because he was just trying to get out of the house and remove himself from the situation, you know. So I see a lot of men and women come across as clients who are truly not guilty.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I myself have had to have a criminal defense lawyer. I wish I would have had somebody a little bit more of your ilk than the person I had. However, I think a lot of cases that happen are sadly, the case where a person is not able to mount a defense. They are not able to afford somebody such as yourself.
Right.
And sure, like everybody, I guess, is it true that every lawyer has to do an amount of pro bono work?
No.
No? I didn't think
so. But believe me, with the friends and family I have, I definitely get my hours in.
I know I've called on you a couple times. And it's one of those that it's hard, like you said, whenever there are cases that you know of that these things are exaggerated. These things are not actively what they seem.
Yeah. Well, for instance, I had a man hire me because his biological daughter had run away from her mom's home to meet a guy she met on the internet. She had already had mental health struggles, and they find her in Ohio. They bring her back to Texas. She's in a mental institution. And right when she's about to be released, she said that she had been sexually assaulted, which she had prosecuted her father's roommate for sexually assaulting her. And the father just couldn't believe that his roommate would have done something like this. He couldn't think of a time where his daughter was left alone with his roommate when she was visiting, but he just kind of let the legal system do what it was going to do. Mm. And so she's getting released from the mental health institution, and she says, and also my dad sexually assaulted me. And then they file charges against him. And in the state of Texas, if there's more than one act in a certain period of time, it's continuous sexual assault of a child, which is 25 years to life. There's no probation, no parole. You could have no criminal history. If you're found guilty and the jury likes you, the minimum you're getting is 25 years day for day because there's no parole.
Wow.
The stakes are extremely high. So he hires me and we ended up taking the case to trial. She testified. He testified. Within an hour, the jury found him not guilty. But what I realized during that trial was that his roommate, who was already serving 40 years he got for her allegation, he is truly innocent. And I have worked with as many people as I could to try to get his case reopened. But the appellate rules are just not allowing us to get there. I'm still working on it. I still have hope for this man. I just feel terrible. And of course, my client, he's trying to do what he can because he realized during the course of the trial and the evidence that was presented that his roommate had been put away falsely accused. And he had a court-appointed attorney. So I went back and looked at what the court-appointed attorney did for this man on a first-degree felony, and he billed the county for 1 hour of work, and he never got an investigator.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Never got an investigator, never went, didn't go and interview the witnesses that this guy was, telling his court-appointed attorney about. So, yeah, when you talk about not everyone can afford to mount a defense, you know, a poor Kyle Rittenhouse, his first attorneys, they were in it, I guess, for publicity. I don't know. I'm going based on what I've just heard in the media for whatever you can, whatever that you can.
Sure, sure.
But they left him in custody for 87 days.
Yeah.
And then he got the new attorneys. And from what I understand, they did at least 2 mock trials where one, he didn't testify, one, he did testify in the mock trials leading up to the main trial. And it really showed when he testified because that kid, he came across very, very well, especially for 18 years old and everything that he had been through.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very well spoken on his own behalf, most definitely.
Yeah.
And that is what a good defense attorney will do.
Right.
Most definitely. And, you know, it's interesting because you brought up the mock trials. I thought it was really interesting. How frequent is it that they actively go to a lottery to choose jurors? That was mind blowing for me when I saw that the defense did that.
That was interesting.
What do you think the reasoning was for that?
Well, now are you talking about when the judge had him pull the names out of
it?
So I think that's and I'm not sure, but I think that's the judge's
prerogative.
Yeah. How he conducts things. But so you have the same amount of people. I mean, the same people listen to the same evidence.
Sure.
Then from that, he pulls out of the jar or whatever the names of the ones who are going to be deliberating. And, you know, from an energy perspective, and this is kind of woo-woo stuff, if you think about that, as he's pulling each name, you're going to have to trust his energy that he's pulling the right people out of that, right?
Yeah. On both sides.
Right.
Like, you got to trust it on the prosecutor's side. But at the same token, and you got to trust it on the defense side. But at the same token, it's the fact of, I think that truly levels the playing field.
Yeah.
Because both the defense and the prosecution had an option to curate who was in that pool to begin with, you know? So you had your chance to be like, okay, this person, we may be able to, on this side of a defense, you know, curry a little bit of favor from them because of what their background is or their history during general jury selection. But I think it was really interesting the fact that amongst that, it wasn't the final jury to make the decision was chosen randomly,
you know,
amongst those people.
And that's what's neat about seeing national and world trials is to see how people do things in the different jurisdictions.
Mm.
Of course, we don't do that at the state level here in Texas. I truly believe you win or lose a case at jury selection because, and it's not what people think. It's really like jury deselection because let's say I have a pool of 64 people for a felony case. I only need 12 and maybe 2 alternates, right? So you got 64 people And then I get 10 strikes for any reason. And then the state gets 10 strikes for any reason. So let's say the state, well, first it starts with the judge who kind of lays the ground rules. Then the state gets up and asks their questions. The defense goes next, asks their questions. Now, anyone who couldn't follow the law, let's say, I'm sorry, but I was a victim of sexual assault and there's no way I could be fair in this case. I'm sorry, I was falsely accused of sexual assault. There's no way I could be fair in this case. I'm sorry, but it's against my religious beliefs to stand in judgment, to sit in judgment of someone. So anyone who can't follow the law, then the judge will go ahead and strike those people for what we call COTS, right? So now let's say out of 64 people, you really need 32, maybe 34 for two alternates, right? So the first 34 of that 64 is what you're looking at because you need 14 plus 10 plus 10, right? Because the strikes. Now, if let's say the judge strikes 10 people for cause because they can't follow the law, then you move to the next. So those 10 get struck. And so from there, one anyway. And so when it comes down to making your strikes as a defense attorney and prosecution too, you got to kind of think, okay, I don't want to use my strike on one they're going to use their strike on, and what we call a double strike. So then you have to kind of anticipate what the other party's going to do so that you can make sure that you're not double striking. But anyway, it's so then the remaining ones, the first 12 to 14 remaining people in that box, those are your jurors. So it's really deselection. It's not like I get to say, oh, I like this guy, Chris. I think, you know, he could really identify with my client. I want him on my team. It doesn't work like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's just, I think, number one, I think a lot of people have a huge misconception about the actual legal process. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, of course, comes from procedural shows. Not that I'm not a fan of, like, murder rape, as I call it, you know, Law and Order. I'll sit back and watch Law and Order all day long in my hotel room. But to think that that is actively the way, like the way that it's shown is the way that the actual legal system works.
Right.
You're missing quite a few steps in there. It's not that exciting all the time.
There's not always a smoking gun.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I was watching on Netflix a series called Reasonable Doubt. I think that's what it was called. And it was about this Innocence Project in Mexico that went to Tabasco, Mexico, because apparently they just revamped part of their legal system to be public trials where everything is on TV or camera. So it's being held publicly compared to what it was before. And so they talked to these three guys and they were accused of kidnapping, which is a big deal in Mexico because people kidnap for ransom. But these guys are truly innocent. And two of them didn't even know the other guy who was supposed to be part of the, you know,
part of their crew.
Right. So, you know, for instance, in Kyle Rittenhouse, in his case, now that the verdict has come back and he was acquitted, that's the end of it. And they can't go back and retry him.
No.
They, you know, any lesser included, you know, double jeopardy attaches to all that.
Yep.
And then the state can't say, well, I don't like that. I'm going to appeal. Right. So we're done. That's the end of it. But with these guys in Mexico, what happened was they were about to be acquitted. And then the state came back in with new arrest warrants for the lesser included attempted kidnapping because they knew they were about to lose. So they got held again. They were in custody for about three years when finally they were convicted and sentenced to 3.5 years. So it's like the there was three judges. It was a tribunal. Kind of apologetically, we're going to find you guilty, but we're going to give you time served. But then all they had to do was just wait for the appeal window to close, and then they would be released. They could taste it. They could smell their freedom after 3.5 years.
Oh, my God.
And 2 minutes before the appellate deadline terminated, the state appealed. Can't happen here, right?
Wow. That
could have happened in the United States. And so then these guys ended up getting 50 years for something that they didn't do. And they're pretty much out of luck at this point. They're still trying to do one more appeal. I don't see that it's going to work for them.
Wow.
But my point being is, as much complaining as you hear in our society, in our media about our legal system, we still have the best system in the world. And for that, I am truly grateful, because if I'm going to be arrested and accused of something, I would much rather be here in the United States than anywhere else.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I say it on the show all the time. I've spent my one night.
Right.
I don't need another night.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need another night to straighten up my life. One was good enough for me. But I have friends that have definitely spent their time inside. Numerous friends that have spent their time inside. You know, one of the, while I have you here, one of the topics that came up in the Curious Realm group here recently was, because I post a lot of articles, spur conversation, and one of them was the possible dropping of the title of sexual offender, and the fact that people may not have to go onto an offender registry anymore.
So I think that there's a lot of education for the public with that, because it's one thing to be a sexual offender in the true sense of what we think that term means.
Yes.
Terms mean as far as like, you know, the pervert who is touching and sexually molesting children, right?
Sure.
The man who targets the young boy going into a public restaurant at a restaurant while mommy waits at the table and takes advantage of this little boy, right? So the scary stuff that we parents in the community are fearful of, those are true sexual offenders. But if it's because the man was 4 years older than the young lady and she was underage, you know, kind of that Romeo Juliet kind of thing. You know, to me, it's very unfair to label that person as a sexual offender. I'm not the legislature. I don't make the law. I just, you know, have to go with what the law says.
Yep.
But that ruins somebody's life.
Yes. Yes. And that's just it. I know more than one person. I know somebody who, and this was, God, 2003, back when the internet was still pretty in its infancy as far as file sharing, things like that. It wasn't like hop onto Amazon and buy things from across the world like it is now.
Right.
Amazon was still just selling books at that point. But he literally opened an email from a group of people, and granted, in a community that he belonged to, with their, I guess, sexual proclivities.
Mm-hmm.
However, he did not know what somebody was sending him when he opened an email, and it ended up being child porn.
Right.
That wasn't the emails that were normally sent along in this private group, in this group of people that got together every Wednesday night. He ended up serving some pretty hard time.
Yeah.
And for something that he never did, he did not seek that out. Nothing like that. He was just caught up with a bunch of other people.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of flags in that, because for people who have never seen images of child porn, it is mind shocking.
Yes.
And so the prosecutors I work with, they are nice enough to remove the images so I don't have to see the actual images, but I have the data so I can compare IP addresses, times, downloads, the content,
yeah.
You know, to see. And so they flag the IP address, and there's a lot of investigation from different sites that work together, because truly, they're trying to identify the children in these images to see if they are kidnapped children being held, you know, and they're trying to, you know, find the children and save them, you know.
Oh, sure.
So you feel like on one hand, it's a victimless crime, but it's not.
It's hugely not. Actual child pornography, things like that are far, far, far from a victimless crime.
Right.
There is somebody there who is not able to give consent. And that's something that even whenever we had, Arshawn McCleskey, like former Secret Service investigator for fraud on our show, that was a big topic of conversation that we had with him all the time, was when will we start seeing the first emancipation cases from children your son's age,
mm-hmm.
Children my son's age, who's 4 and a half. We're friends on Facebook. I've known you since high school.
Right.
We share pictures, all kinds of stuff. I've never once put my son's name with his picture on social media.
Right.
Never. Because he is not old enough to consent to me even sharing his biometric data in a picture with the machine.
That's true.
So at what point will we start seeing these cases of, I want emancipation from my irresponsible parents who gave my permission to the machine without my consent? They gave away my biometric data.
Right.
You know? And yeah, just things like that where our technology is moving to a new level now.
Right.
It's moving to a new place. And when you're talking about things like dark web, child pornography, things like that, the horrible, horrible things that you get to deal with on the side of a defendant, it can get dark really quick.
It can. But you know what? Honestly, because when I walked into my computer science class as a freshman in college, so this would have been the fall of 93.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my computer science teacher saying, she had the screen pulled down using a projector, and she said, I want to introduce y'all to something today. It's called the World Wide Web. And that was my opinion, right?
Same.
Because we didn't grow up in this era of technology like our kids have. I almost feel like that generation of kids, our children, are more responsible with the internet than we are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think so as well. And my wife says that regularly, the fact that they will be the ones to go Puritan. Like my son's generation will be the ones to go, what did you people do?
Right.
Like, good Lord have mercy.
Right.
You wonder how we got where we got.
Well, for instance, like my son, who's 21, he doesn't have much of a presence on social media whatsoever.
Good for him.
My daughter, she won't allow me to tag her in anything. She's 24, but
good.
She says I'm very private, and I want to keep it that way. Both of them. I'm just very private. I want to keep it that way. So I do think your wife is on to something when it comes to that. Because
now, do you think that some of that is from you, your career, your actual training of them? Yeah, because much like my experience as an assistant youth minister and the classes that I've had to take with dealing with children, things like that, that has definitely changed the way I deal with my son.
Right.
That has changed the way I explain things to my son, things like that. Do you think that perhaps you being a defense attorney and just that education of conscience as they were coming up as teenagers to be like, hey guys, you know, do your thing, go out there, have fun, be careful, but please just don't have to call me like that.
Like,
feel free to call me for a ride home, but don't call me because you're getting a ride home that you don't need.
Well, you know, we've always had a very open channel of communication. And so that was definitely helpful. I definitely have, you know, educating my kids along the way through the lessons that I've learned in the legal realm. While I would love to take credit for their conservativeness on the internet, it's not for me. Did I lay some grounding, for them as far as like how they decision make? I would like to think so as a parent, but their decision to be private and not put everything out there on the internet is solely their decisions. That came from them.
Wow. That's great to hear. That's really fantastic. Cause I mean, of course we guide them down a path, but to know that they are making that conscious decision themselves in this day and age.
Right.
It gives a lot of hope, you know, because I really think, I was one of those kids when we were in high school and in, you know, microcomputer applications, like, I went home and I dialed into bulletin boards. I file swapped. Like I was in what some people would consider chat rooms, things like that, before chat rooms exist on AOL.
I don't want to say his name, but do you remember our senior year in high school, one of the smartest guys in our class got suspended, ended up getting his GED because he broke into the school's, the ISD.
Yeah.
Changed, I think his absences are great.
Yeah.
To that effect.
Yeah.
I don't even know what happened to that, but you know, do you remember more details about it?
That is exactly what I recall, was that he went in and changed his absentee record.
He was so smart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He was one of those that, like, yeah, he skipped class and went out and did his thing here and there. And, you know, like...
But for back then, that's in 1992.
That was
a big deal.
That was some pretty hardcore stuff, dude. Yeah. Like, yeah, we had an actual hacker in our class that went war games and broke into the school computer. Yeah. Like, it actively happened. And to see the, like, I see technicians that sit there with apps on their computer and hack people's Wi-Fi just because it's fun, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of the division that's sowed in this country is as a result of social media and algorithms and the settings. And
sure.
I was just listening to another podcast where they were talking about how much of this fighting that you see going on, you know, is just bots. It's just bots making up all, like, one of them is saying, I disagree with your opinion because blah, blah, blah. And the next one says, well, I think you're a cunt. None of this is true people. These are all bots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And well, I think it's interesting that every time they bring about an AI that's learning and basically like learning grammar and jargon the way that a human brain does, that typically within like a week, it just goes horribly awry.
Right.
Like they become crazy racist or totally misogynistic.
Right.
It's like, wow, it's interesting. And really, I think a study on humanity to begin with, because, yeah, that stuff is being culled and pulled from social media and other sources and writings and articles and all that kind of stuff.
And most of it is being set in place by countries that we're not, you know.
It's true.
So, I mean, what a better way to attack the United States if you wanted to get to us than to sow discord through our social media and have us at each other's throats. And so I think that my kids reckon, and they're not kids anymore, they're young adults, but I think they recognized that before I did. And that's part of the reason that they just don't exert any energy, because you don't know what's real and what's not real. And they would rather have peace than that chaos and disruption in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just the peace of mind of like, well, and really the concept that America is supposed to be of, you know, just not in my backyard.
Right.
Do whatever you want on your fence line.
Mm-hmm.
That's your fence line. Enjoy. When it leaks over to my backyard, we need to have a talk as neighbors.
Right.
And now, granted, before I let you go, the one case that I have to kind of talk about, especially whenever you're, because, the whole reason that we had you on tonight was talking about the media and how it can skew the concept of innocent until proven guilty. And I do not, one of the huge causes that we are behind with this show is human trafficking, sexual trafficking, things like that. With the Ghislaine Maxwell case coming up,
mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to say that there's not a lot there, because there's a lot there. But at the same time, she is due that same respect in court.
Right.
She is due that same innocent until proven guilty, despite of what the media says, despite of what's out there, despite of her name being in documents from other court cases involving the now dead Jeffrey Epstein, things like that.
Well, you know, I think that it's hard for us to conceive that she had no idea what Jeffrey Epstein was up to, right? Because we only see from the outside. But we are not her.
Yeah.
We were not involved in those conversations between she and Jeffrey. We don't know what the day-to-day interactions were, or what she was told, or what she believed. We are not in her head, right?
Yeah.
So those conversations that she has with her defense attorneys, that will be what comes out in trial. Everything else is speculation on our part, right? So that's why we have to presume people are innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And I just think, you know, you have all these interviews with witnesses who have come forward. But all we get is what's brought to us. We haven't done any independent research on the credibility of these witnesses or their veracity for their truthfulness, confirm the facts, you know. So those are things that'll come out as the evidence is brought out in the trial. But because I have been in high profile trials, sometimes I would go home and watch the news and think, are they watching the same trial that I'm watching? Because that's not what I remember happening today, you know?
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see how it's brought out. But I always ask everyone to just not cast judgment until they've heard all the facts.
Yeah.
Now, on the Aubrey case, you know, at first I thought, why are they even trying this? Because it seemed like it was a pretty open and shut case for this.
Yeah.
Based on the video footage, you know, which had they not even had, at one point they weren't even bringing charges until they got this camera video footage,
yep.
Which again is a game changer in the legal community. But there were things that I heard as they were conducting the trial that I did not know, that were, you know, had me pause, consider, you know. But you look at the Rittenhouse versus the Aubrey trials and their outcomes, and who could look at those two trials and not have faith that our system works? It works.
Yeah.
You know, if we just leave it alone.
Yeah, and that's just it. It is the fact of the system's there. It works when it's done properly, and it's not supposed to be interfered with. We aren't supposed to have 85 cameras in the courtroom,
right?
Going with live feeds going on and everything else, like you say. And it was definitely O.J. Simpson. That was the birth of CNN,
right?
At that point, you know, like we had just got done as the same generation, seeing things like the Gulf War being broadcast like 24/7.
Right.
On CNN. Like, you remember the Saturday Night Live jokes with Al Franken with the helmet and the satellite dish,
yes,
reporting from out in the field? Because that's what it was all the time.
Yes.
Then it became the Menendez brothers.
Yes.
That was the first one where it was really like they were I believe that was actively the birth of Court TV. If I'm not mistaken.
But look, what you learn in the Menendez trial, right? You're like, how do these kids just murder their parents? These rich little kids just wanted to get away with the insurance money. But you didn't know what was going on behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Not that it justified. But
no.
That is what a jury's there to decide, not for us as the public who don't know the intricate details.
That's right. Who have not been given privy to all of the folders of information that aren't given to the media or let outside of a courtroom.
Right, right. So it'll be interesting to see how this upcoming trial, you know, turns out and what we learn from that. But while it's great that we have the ability to have the cameras inside the courtrooms, you know, I think the media needs to slow down and stop jumping to try to get that clickbait in the headlines, yeah, and making assumptions. Because when you're in the midst of a high profile national trial like Rittenhouse, and half the country still thinks that the victims were African American and not white, and that this is about race, there is some major miscommunication in our nation.
Yeah. There were, even today, whenever I was looking up the articles and stuff that I brought up from NPR and all that kind of stuff, whenever I looked up Kyle Rittenhouse verdict, five of the top article headlines were something racially involved.
Right.
And yes, it was a racially charged situation that led to this horrible tragedy, but there was not a single shot fired across racial lines when it came to the incidents that led to the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse.
Well, and let's just back up for a second. So it was because Jacob Blake had gotten shot by the police, right?
Yes.
And even
horrible, horrible stuff.
And even during the trial, we had mainstream media reporting that Jacob Blake was dead. How do you think Mr. Blake felt about being called dead? He's alive.
Yes.
He was shot. He's alive, you know. But if you can't even get the basic facts right, how do we rely on the news that we're getting?
Yeah. Yeah. I have definitely been a part of the media. I've been a part of local mainstream media. I've been a part of the alternative media.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that they are both equally as guilty. One for clickbait, the other for fear mongering.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad to see a society just ridden with cortisol addiction. You know, at what point, JL, should somebody have a phone number like yours in their pocket? Because for me, it was way too late.
You know, I joke, I say, if you know someone or if you go to jail, call JL. But you never know when you might be the one that needs a defense attorney, and nobody likes defense attorneys until they need one. And, you don't know if it's going to be you or your family member or your friend, but, we're Houston based, 713-201-6767. You can find me on the internet at jlcarpenterlaw.com.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you for coming on, talking about this. I want to have you on once again and again and again, whenever these things come up, because I think it's really important for us as a society to keep ourselves in check, to keep ourselves and our mentality when it comes to these things. Because, I'm here to tell you, folks, you never know when you will end up on the other side of the law.
Right.
Like, we are all exactly two steps away from it. All it takes is an accusation from somebody, anything.
Yes.
And insane hijinks can happen to your life, and you can be one of those people that are branded sex offender. You can be one of those people that have been falsely accused, like what you're talking about, that you horribly have to represent all too frequently.
Right.
What would you say is the odd number inside of there of the cases that you've handled where somebody's been falsely accused?
I would say there's a good amount of folks who come to me who've been falsely accused, whether it was, you know, DWI. And let me just say this, you know, probable cause is not that big of a standard. So for an officer to get a warrant or to make an arrest at the level of probable cause, that is a far cry from beyond a reasonable doubt. So if you've got a potential DWI out there on the street and you arrest them on probable cause, the officer's doing what they need to do to take somebody who potentially could be a danger off the street for the night, and then let it sort itself out in the courtroom. And if you can't get beyond a reasonable doubt, it's the prosecutor's job to serve justice, whatever that looks like. And sometimes serving justice is a dismissal. So, you know, the officers are doing their part to protect the community, but that doesn't necessarily mean that when the case gets to the courtroom, it's going to always be beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's why it's really important for the community to maintain that presumption of innocence until those facts come out in a courtroom. But, you know, I represent a wide range of folks who are either falsely accused or who are guilty, who have substance abuse issues or mental health issues, or who made a bad choice and they just need help cleaning up the mess. So it's a variety of situations, but absolutely, next to being a mom and a parent, it is the most rewarding job.
It is definitely a calling. It's one of those that it is a vocation in life. It's not a job.
Right.
You do it because you actively want to help people, and you have a heart the size of Texas, JL. You always have. And to know that there are people like you out there as defense attorneys. I've known people that definitely were defense attorneys that shouldn't have been. You are one of the most genuine and amazing people I've ever met. So thank you for everything that you do. Thank you for always coming on the show, talking about these topics. I can't wait to have you on again and again on Curious Realm.
All right. You got it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the knowledge vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app. Available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.